I want to thank all of you for being here today. If you're visiting with us, we want you to know that you're our honored guest, and we want to invite you to come back at any opportunity that you have to be with us here at ESAD. If you have any questions about what's said or done here, feel free to ask myself or one of the elders or any of the other men here, and we'll be glad to address your questions. When I was growing up, I didn't have a lot. And that's not a slam on mom and dad or anything. That's just the way it was when I grew up. I used to dream about having things when I grew up. Those dreams didn't stop even after I got married. I used to ride around in my cook's truck and think, I wondered what it'd be like to have millions of dollars to where you could buy just anything you wanted. And sometimes when you're riding around by yourself and all you've got is the radio and traffic around you, it's easy to daydream. Or wish. Our society is filled with people that like to wish, isn't it? There's a man by the name of Walt Disney that preached about wishes. He said, all our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them. The thing about Walt Disney is it's all about wishes. He's got a cruise line now called the Disney Wish is the cruise ship. Imagine that. There are movies by Walt Disney, When You Wish Upon a Star. There is a new movie out by Disney that my grandchildren told me about that I had to watch the other day called Wish. It's about a sorcerer who controls everybody's wishes. They turn them over to him and he keeps them in a room that's a floating vault. And the little girl in the movie is going to be his assistant. She finds out, he says, I determine whose wishes are fulfilled. I determine. And he made a point in his movie that not everybody can handle their wishes being fulfilled. And I think, you know, to a certain degree, that's true, isn't it? What if the things that I wished for came true? What if I was wishing and I had all the money that I needed in the world? Where would I be? There's a lot of supposition here. Suppose I had all of that. Would I still be a Christian? Would I still be married to Marilyn? Would I still have all of these 10 wonderful grandchildren that I have? But at the same time, if I got all my wishes fulfilled, doesn't it pose or cause a lot of other problems? You hear about people that, and there used to be TV shows about people that won the lottery. They're going to be set for life. And then they have people coming out of the woodwork. Well, I'm your cousin. You owe me money. And they wind up in worse shape at the end than they did at the beginning. You remember the book of Job that we studied about? Last week we had a lesson on the friends of Job. At the end of it, Job is questioning God about why these things happened to him. And he made a couple of wishes, if you will, in talking about his calamity. I wish I'd never been born. Remember that? I wish the day that I was born or conceived had never taken place. What if Job had never been born? Would God have used someone else for this story? What if we're going through such trials in our life that we wish we'd never been born? Have you ever thought about that? What if you had never been born? There's a lot of ripple effect that we could have that we're not going to go into that. But our lesson today is based off of 1 Samuel chapter 8. We're studying this on Wednesday night. And it's Israel's demand for a king. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, we see that Israel wanted a king. Saul has been called, or about to be called in our study, to be that first king. A lot of people talk about Saul's kingship, if you will, as being one of the most tragic figures in the Old Testament. He starts out with the promise of everything that God wants him to have. Could be the greatest king to have ruled over Israel, but he turns into such a tragic story. I think we can learn a lot from this story of Israel wanting a king. We're not going to look at Saul per se, just in the periphery of it, of our story, of our lesson, but we're going to look at Israel's demand for a king. Israel didn't ask for a king. Lord, if you think it's good, they came to Samuel and said, "We want a king." Remember that? Give us a king. Give it to us now. Ultimately, they got their wish to be like all the nations around them. But getting what they wished for brought so many problems to them as a nation. Ultimately, asking or demanding a king over them led to disaster. Ultimately, because they wanted a king to be like all the nations around them, they wound up in captivity. The nation was divided. They went into Assyrian captivity, into Babylonian captivity, and they stayed there for 70 years, remember? Before God ever allowed a remnant to return. So in 1 Samuel chapter 8, beginning in verse 1 through verse 21, we see the people's demand. They demanded a king. We're told that the elders of the tribe stood before Samuel at a place called Ramah. We studied that this past week, this past Wednesday night. And they went to Samuel in verse 4. We read that they say to Samuel, "Behold, you're old. You've grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways." The story of Samuel here reminds me of Eli. Eli was a good leader. Samuel was a good leader, but their sons didn't follow in the same path, in the same footsteps. So they tell Samuel in verse 5, "Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations." We want to be like everybody else. What were they asking for? Well, we know that all the kingdoms around them had warrior kings. They're tired of this judge system, and they want something different. You know, on the surface, this was not a bad request of them. It was actually a reasonable request. They're tired of the existing system, and they want something different. But in view of their situation, you think about it. We want to be like all these other nations around us that have been oppressing us. Why would you want to be like them? But the concept is they wanted a king to lead them like the other nations. They were surrounded by nations that were their enemies. Of particular concern at that time was the Ammonites and the Philistines. Now, they didn't argue the fact that Samuel had been a good leader. We know that he had encouraged the people to obey. We're told earlier in 1 Samuel 7 that as long as Samuel was the judge and the prophet, the Philistines no longer bothered them, remember? So there's a good thing. Things are looking better under the leadership of Samuel. But his leadership, as I said, during that time had prevented the Philistines from attacking Israel. But now, man, you're old. You're too old to continue in this job, at least in their estimation. As old as he was getting, he was not going to be effective any longer. And we know that from verses 1 through 3 of chapter 8, they didn't feel like his sons could display the same leadership qualities that were needed to guide them as a nation. And as I said, Israel was tired of being in a judge system. That had been taking place for many years, that particular arrangement had. After Joshua died, you'll remember that nations around them began to oppress them, and God would bring up a judge to deliver them from that oppression. They're tired of it. The nation as a whole at this particular time was made up of loose federations of tribes. And they wanted somebody to help the nation congeal together to have an effective leader, a warrior king. As a rule, what they were looking at was that their enemies all had warrior kings, and that's what we need to be like them. And that's what we see in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 19 and 20. "Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, 'No, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles.'" Little did they know, the kings didn't fight. They said, you go fight. So the promise, the problem here wasn't that Israel was asking for a king. That's not the problem. The problem was that they had lost their faith in God. Again. In Genesis chapter 17 and verse 17, Sarah is called there the mother of nations. Beginning in verse 15, God said to Abraham, as for Sarah, your wife, you shall not call her Sarah, but Sarah shall be her name. Sarai. But Sarah shall be her name, and I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations, of kings and people shall be from her. And that promise is repeated in Genesis 35 and verse 11 to Jacob. And then when God gave the law of Moses to the people, it's repeated in that. The fact that the people would someday ask for a king, God knew. God knew that they would ask for a king, and it was anticipated. Because in giving of the law in Deuteronomy 17, beginning in verse 14, in God's law, he says, when you come to the land which the Lord your God has given you, and possess it and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me. Fascinating, isn't it? That God knew. Before they ever asked for a king, that you're going to ask for a king. You shall surely set a king over you, whom the Lord your God chooses. One from among your brethren you shall set as king over you. You may not set a foreigner over you who is not your brother. You know, another fascinating aspect of this is the people later admitted to Samuel, we've messed up by asking for a king. They said in 1 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 19, to Samuel, pray for your servants to the Lord your God that we may not die, for we added to all our sins the evil of asking for a king for ourselves. It's almost like they're saying, we didn't really know what we were doing. We didn't know what we were asking for. But even when you go back to 1 Samuel 8, chapter 8, and they're asking for a king, Samuel begins to remind them, this is what's going to happen. And you can basically call it a taxation. They're going to lose land. They're going to lose harvest. They're going to lose their children. They're going to lose their servants to be given to the king. You're going to be taxed beyond measure. So what was the problem? What was wrong with Israel requesting a king? I'll put that politely. They requested a king. What was wrong with that? A couple of things. First, the problem was the people seemed to be more concerned with what they wanted instead of what God wanted. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Because that's what man has always done from the beginning of time, isn't it? Eve, you shall not surely die. Remember? We'll build this tower that we can reach heaven and meet with God face to face. Was that God's plan? No, that was man's plan. God has given us directives to follow. And when our wishes go beyond that, we need to be careful what we wish for. When they made this request or this demand, we don't have any record of it, but they could have gone to God and asked Him, Lord, in the past, you indicated that someday we would have a king. And we believe that it's time. Do you think it's time for us to have a king? We believe it is. It seems that this would be, that we would need to become unified as a nation and to be victorious over our enemies in order to glorify your name. But that's not what they did, was it? They skipped God and they went to Samuel and they said, man, you're old. And we got to have us a king to be like everybody else. And as far as we know, they never inquired of God about this. That's a problem. That's a problem when we fail to talk to God about the things going on in our lives. The second thing that makes this wrong is that their request was wrong. Not that they really, that it was wrong for them to ask for a king, but because they were more concerned about being like the nations around them and not being God's special people. We want to be different. Different how? Different from what God wants us to be. We want to be like all the other nations. And there again is another problem. You see, God had called them out of Egypt and made them His people, His inheritance, according to 1 Samuel 9 and verse 16, chapter 10 and verse 1, and again in chapter 12 and verse 22, He reminds Samuel of this. And when we read about the Israelites serving all of these false gods after Joshua and those elders, we find that they didn't just bow down to them and burn incense. But pagan worship also had a sensual side to it, a seductive element that appealed to the fleshly minded people of Israel. That's really what they wanted. And what they failed to understand is that that was a gross offense to God. And still, we want to be like everybody else. Well, that's exactly what they've been doing. It's like everybody else, worshiping false gods. We just studied in 1 Samuel about how the Israelites went up in battle against the Philistines and they took the Ark of the Covenant as a talisman, as a good luck charm, and they lost the battle and the Philistines took it. Do you remember the rest of the story? Where they placed the Ark of the Covenant with God's mercy seat on it? In the temple of their false god Dagon. And so many things began to happen to their image that they made with their hands. They said, we got to get rid of this. They sent the Ark of the Covenant back. And the method they used was to put it on a brand new ox cart, two cattle that had lowing calves, and they separated the mama from the baby calves. And they said, if these cows turn around and come back to their calves, we know it was just an accident. But if they go back to Jerusalem, if they go back to Israel, we'll know that it's the God of the Israelites, the God of heaven. I'm fascinated that they didn't want to follow the God of heaven, knowing that that's exactly where those oxen went. The lords of the Philistines followed it. A third problem is that their request was wrong because it reflected a lack of trust in God on their part. Go back to when they were in Egypt. They flee Egypt, across the Red Sea, unharmed. They travel in the wilderness, and we see that God supplied their very needs. He's always took care of His people, even when they're ungrateful. But we wish for a king. And He promised even to take care of them even in the future. I mean, after all, He brought them to a land that was flowing with milk and honey, didn't He? He's still taking care of them. And whatever king or leader they would get, whether it's a prophet, a judge, a priest, or a king, God was going to raise up what they needed as an individual nation. The people were not willing to leave the future in God's hands. And we could make the same mistake and not be willing to let God handle our future. Whatever king or leader they would get, God had promised to take care of. Samuel initially was hurt. His response was similar to what ours might be. His heart was broken, as we talked about in Bible class this morning. But God told him in 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 7, heed the voice of the people. Listen to them. Do what they ask you. Heed the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me that I should not reign over them. What was wrong with requesting a king? A few things. But you know the rest of the story, beginning in verse 22 of 1 Samuel chapter 8, going through chapter 10, God gave them a king. Now, take yourself out of your future knowledge of what 1 Samuel talks about. You know who the king's going to be. But back up and ask yourself from the standpoint of having never studied this passage and say, well, who was going to be this king? Well, when the king was chosen, the people were not asked to choose. Samuel told them basically to go home in 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 22. Ultimately, as we've known from other passages before, in like Deuteronomy, God would choose the man to be the king. And when we talk about Saul, he had a kingly appearance according to chapter 9 and verse 26. That's what we want. He looks the part. But what about his heart? The people got a young man, kingly in appearance. He stood head and shoulders above everyone else, remember? But he had other qualities also, such as humility. I know you don't remember that about Saul, but he began having humility. He rose to the occasion immediately after becoming king and led the people in a military victory. That's what we want. That's what the people wanted. A warrior king. But they got exactly what they asked for. A king like other nations. The king of Israel was supposed to be a man, a leader that would work hand in hand with God. He was the Lord's anointed after all. And they should have been asking questions about their new king like, is he a man of prayer? Is he devoted to doing the will of God? Is he like David as described in Acts 13 verse 22, a man after God's own heart? But they didn't ask those questions, did they? Saul had the potential to be a great leader of Israel. The Lord gave him everything he needed to be great, as well as being a great military leader. 1 Samuel chapter 10 and verse 10, it says, the Spirit of God came upon him. God was with him. A few verses later in the same chapter, in verse 16, it says, you will be changed into another man, talking about Saul. You're not going to be what you once were. And in chapter 10 and verse 9, backing up, we see that the text tells us that God changed Saul's heart. But that humble young man became disobedient and proud. We notice in 1 Samuel 13 and verse 8, then he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel. He wanted Samuel to come and help offer a sacrifice. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. They left Saul. In chapter 15 and verse 12, so when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul went to Carmel. And indeed, he set up a monument for himself, and he has gone on around, passed by, and gone down to Gilgal. Later on in chapter 15, beginning in verse 17, we see, so Samuel said, beginning in verse 17, when you were little in your own eyes, were you not ahead of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, the fight against them until they are consumed. When they did not obey the voice of the Lord, why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? This is Samuel talking to Saul. And Saul said to Samuel, but I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission on which the Lord sent me, and brought back Agag, king of Amalek. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites, but the people took the plunder, sheep and oxen, the best of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. Isn't this interesting? Did you notice what Saul said? I did what you told me to. I did what the Lord told me to do. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites, but I brought back the king. Makes it sound like Adam and Eve, doesn't it? These people you gave me, they wanted the plunder. They brought back the plunder. But it's fascinating that they brought it back to sacrifice to the Lord, your God, in Gilgal, not my God. our God. Goes on in verse 22, and Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in the obeying, as in obeying the voice of the Lord?" This ought to be a familiar passage to us. Samuel goes on to say, "Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry." And here's the final straw. "Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." Eventually, we're told in chapter 16 and verse 14 that the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a distressing spirit from the Lord troubled him. We need to be, as we say about the Israelites, be careful what you wish for. You might just get it. I'm going to tell you a story that I've told you before about a woman whose son had cancer. And she took him to Vanderbilt to have treatment. He was a teenager, not an adult, so they put him in the child's ward, the children's section of the hospital. Like I say, he had cancer. And she prayed constantly. And this is what she told me. She said, "I prayed all the time that God would take this pain away from him." Be careful what you wish for. She said, "I got to watching these people that I had become friends with while their children were here, and I got to noticing that when they would leave, it's not to go home, but to prepare a funeral." And she said, "It made me think, I wish that this cancer was gone and that his pain was gone, but it could actually be that God takes him out of this world to get rid of the pain." She said, "It made me think. And I have changed the way that I talk to God." You see, the people of Israel, they didn't ask for a spiritual leader who could lead them and bring them closer to God. They demanded a king to be like the nations around them. And they got it all wrong. What are you wishing for today? I don't care what it is. But make sure that what you are wishing for is what God would want you to have. Are you sure that that's what He wants you to have? Is it something that could have an adverse effect on your life if you actually got it? Are you actually willing to pray fervently that you get what God did, is willing to give you? You know, Jesus prayed fervently when he was in the garden before his arrest and crucifixion. He asked that the cup pass from him, but he realized he still had to live out the remaining hours of his life according to God's plan. And he closed his prayer by saying, "Not my will, but yours be done." Do we think about that when we talk to God and make our request known to Him? "I want this, I'd like to have this, but not my will, but your will be done." And we may make that statement, but do we really mean it? Brothers and sisters, we need to be careful what we wish for. We might just get it, and it might not be the answer that we want. Now, we know that the only way that God's going to hear our prayers is if we are His disciples, His children, His followers. He'll answer our prayers and He'll hear our prayers, but only if we are His children. And faithful children at that. It may be that you're here this morning. You're not a child of God. You can pray to God. He'll hear your prayers. He heard Cornelius in Acts chapter 10. But he sent someone to teach Cornelius what he needed to do. And he taught him that he needed to become a child of God. So if you're here today and you need to be a child of God, this is an opportunity for you to bring your broken life to Christ and ask God to help you heal that broken life. It may be that you've already done that, but your life is still broken, you can use this opportunity to come back to Christ, knowing that God will hear your prayers. He'll hear your pleas. So if you're here this morning and you need to respond to the invitation, I pray that you'll make your way to the front while together we stand in